honor to bring you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak. In this unrehearsed conference, four of America's top news reporters are ready to talk with Secretary of the Treasury Robert Anderson. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
The United States government finds itself confronted with a serious financial problem. The nation is paying out in foreign expenses about $4 billion a year more than it is taking in. This deficit in the balance of payments is causing a drain on our gold reserves and is threatening to weaken the American dollar. The Secretary of the Treasury, Mr. Robert Anderson, who is our guest today, shares the responsibility for finding a solution to this crisis. One purpose of his recent visit to West Germany was to urge the Bonn government to assume a larger share of the cost of the defense program. We'll start the questions today with Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Secretary, on the 28th of September, before the election, you said before the International Monetary Fund meeting that we have made real progress toward the objective of reasonable equilibrium in our balance of payments. What happened in the 2 months since then that made the balance of payments problem so much more critical?
At the same time that I was making that statement, Mr. McCormick, I gave quite a comprehensive analysis of our economic problems and stated quite clearly that we had not at that time met our objective. We Americans must come to realize that we have come to one end of an era and to the beginning of another. At the end of World War II, when a great portion of the world had been devastated by the war, we were the only nation that made the things that people needed and wanted in order to rebuild that which had been destroyed. In order to make it possible for those people to buy from us, we initiated a number of programs such as the Marshall Plan. We exported American dollars, and these dollars were in turn utilized by other countries to buy things from us. At the same time, we realized that other countries had to accumulate dollars because they needed to reestablish their financial system. And so we were agreeable to countries putting up restrictions against American imports in order that they might accumulate dollars. Now, about 1957, these plants were completed. The working capital had been accumulated. The raw material was on the ground. The fact the workers had been trained. A great number of salesmen all over the world were in position. And the competitive enterprise between the United States and other countries, which were what we had been trying to do, began in earnest all over again. In 1958, we ran a deficit in our balance of payments of $3.4 billion. In 1959, we ran a deficit of $3.8 billion. And it would have been more than $4 billion, but for some addition, for some advance payments of debts. This year, we're going to run a deficit approaching something like the deficit which we ran in 1959. So that during the last 3 years, we will have run deficits, the total of which is more than $10 billion. Now, in this process, foreign central banks and foreign individuals have accumulated about $18 to $19 billion of claims against the United States. At the same time, all these are all short-term claims and can be called quickly. At the same time, other nations owe to us between $59 and $60 billion of claims, but these are long-term claims. And so we have come to occupy a traditional position of a bank. We are in effect borrowing short and we are lending long. Now, there is another new condition. In every period of the world's history, in order to have high levels of business, in order to carry on trade and commerce and provide jobs, there must be some country or countries that supplies a supplemental reserve to to gold against which other countries can issue their money and carry on their business. This is a function also largely performed by the United States. And other countries hold a portion of our dollars as a reserve against which they issue their currency. In this dual position of being an international banker and of being the supplier of reserves to other countries, we have come to be subject to additional discipline. Other people are interested not only in how we manage our affairs at home and with what degree of responsibility, but how we manage our international relationships. Now, at the risk of having a long answer, I should like to point one other answer. It is sometimes suggested that why can a nation that has a gross national product of $500 billion worry about such a small thing as a $4 billion deficit in its balance of payments? Let me ask you to draw an analogy with an individual. Suppose that a relatively poor individual had a salary of $2,700 and he spent $3,000. He would have a deficit. Suppose that another very rich man had a salary of $270,000 per year, but he spent $300,000. He would have a deficit. Both of these deficits have to be financed. In the case of the individual, they would be financed by borrowing from somebody. In the case of the country, they would be financed by borrowing from the total of our citizens. But when this deficit is run on an international basis, it can be claimed as a credit or cashed in as a credit against our limited reserves of gold. This is the essence of the problem.
Well, in this situation, have we made any serious effort to try to curtail foreign investments? According to the best figures I was able to get, our loss in dollars and gold over the three-year period in foreign investments, our net loss, has been around $5 billion, which seems considerably more important to me than $600 million that we tried to get from the West German government.
In determining the balance of payments, one must take into consideration all of the money which we earn by reason of our exports, by reason of people coming to visit us, or by reason of investments in our country and all other sources of income, and our outpayments, such as our imports, our economic aid programs, our mutual security programs, the amounts of money which individuals or corporations invest abroad. And it is this balance in total that has resulted in the deficits for the past 3 years and the cumulative effect, which is the real problem that the nation faces.
Mr. Rapley.
Well, Mr. Secretary, you have taken some fairly sharp action in the last couple of weeks, bearing on our dependents abroad, bringing some of them back, tying up some of the foreign aid lending that we engage in. I wonder, sir, if there are other areas that may need to be curtailed in the future, and I refer specifically to restriction of tourism abroad, to the restriction on our capital investment abroad, and to whether you might have to bring back some of the troops that are now stationed abroad in order to meet this problem.
Mr. Rapley, the important thing is to be sure that we attack our problem in the right way and avoid doing the wrong thing. There are about two general areas that one would think of considering. The first is the great area involving all trade and commerce and international relations. This would involve such things as tariffs and as quotas and as other kind of restrictive action. But all countries can engage in this kind of process. If we, for example, put up a quota in which we do not allow certain materials to come to us, other countries can put up a quota in which will prohibit American exports going to them. And so the general effect would be a restriction rather than an expansion of world trade. What we must try to do to avoid is to avoid those things which would hamper the expansion of world trade, which provides the jobs, the opportunities, the resources for our domestic needs, and the resources for our mutual security. We must try to avoid those things which would impair the efficiency and the operating capacity of the international financial system, which is anchored to and rests upon the cornerstone of the dollar.
Mr. Lissagore.
Mr. Secretary, I wonder if I could get down to a specific in this matter. If nothing else works that we have suggested or the administration has suggested, would you be prepared to recommend the withdrawal of some of our forces in Germany, which does represent quite a drain on us?
Mr. Lissagore, this is not within the province of any single individual to make so important a decision. I am quite sure that we must have a system of collective security. I am quite sure that we must not try to resort to a Fortress America either in an economic sense or in a military sense. I am also sure that we must try to be sure that all of us carry our proportionate parts of this responsibility. Now, let me say with reference to our recent visit to which you allude, it cost the American taxpayer in budgetary terms about $1.6 billion to maintain troops in Germany. Of this amount, about $600 million represents a transfer of dollars from the United States to the Federal German Republic. While we in this country are running a deficit of between $3.5 and $4 billion, the Federal German Republic is accumulating a surplus of about half of this amount. It is because of the imbalance between our two countries in the deficit and surplus position that it seemed to us appropriate that we could discuss with our friends the possibility of finding some way in which there could be compensating factors for the transfer of dollars between the United States and the Federal German Republic.
Mr. Secretary, did we regard the request of the Germans, as I assume we made it, for them picking up this $600 million, did we regard that as a fair proposal on our part? And why did they regard it as an unfair proposal since they rejected it?
Mr. Lissagore, this is not an American problem. This is a world problem. The capability of the whole world, the whole free world, to maintain the kind of economic activity that will provide for the domestic needs of our people and to provide the capacity for us to generate resources is going to depend upon our maintaining the integrity of the United States dollar. We cannot allow a long continuation of large deficits of this size to go on indefinitely. It seemed therefore appropriate that where half of our deficit is represented by the German surplus, that it would be appropriate for us to discuss in a frank and a friendly manner this problem with our friends because it's important to them as it is to us.
Mr. Wilson.
Well, on that point, Mr. Secretary, you appear to have rejected any suggestions made by the German government as to how they might help ease this problem.
Mr. Wilson, there have been two misconceptions that I would like to clarify. In the first place, it has been suggested that our suggestion to the Germans came rather abruptly. We discussed the matter of costs and of the imbalance between our countries and of the dollar outflow with our German friends at the time of the meeting of the International Bank and Monetary Fund in September. Early in October, the president addressed a letter to the chancellor in which the same question was raised. Subsequent to that time, in Augusta, very deliberately, we announced that this was going to be a part of the problem which we would discuss with our German friends. We were careful to advise the United States ambassador, to advise the German government, that this would be a part of our discussion. We invited the members of the German embassy to the Treasury in order to discuss with them the kinds of suggestions that we might be making to our German friends. We recognize the difficulties which would be encountered by it. And we propose to them that we try to establish some kind of a counterbalance by establishing a fund into which the German government might put dollars, and out of which we might, by agreement, pay such items as military hardware that the Germans would like to acquire, or which they might be willing to furnish to third countries, or for rental cost or other cost which we might by agreement decide was appropriate and proper. This would, of course, represent a budgetary cost or money which would have to be raised in the capital markets of Germany in order to provide these resources. They felt at this time that it was not possible for them to make this agreement. Now, in the second place, we did not reject any of the proposals or any of the suggestions made by our friends, and as a matter of fact, we are still continuing to pursue them.
Which one of those suggestions would you consider to be the most reasonable and workable?
The suggestion which I think we're pursuing now most carefully is the suggestion that the Federal German Republic might purchase from us additional military items, items which they would be use either for their own forces or which they would provide to third countries. This is not going to be entirely simple. It will have to be determined on the basis of the items which the German government does not wish to produce itself, or items which they do not wish to procure from other countries, such as England and France, and items which they are willing to add to their military procurement programs.
In other words, the German negotiations are not over, and you hope to get some help from them in this problem that we have.
Yes.
Gentlemen, our time is slipping away. If the panel members will keep their questions short, I'm sure the Secretary will try to keep his answers brief. Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Secretary, the German press and the American press have both said that you were trying to get $600 million to maintain our troops in Germany. Now you talk of sort of a general fund that you were trying to create. Is that the misconception you mean?
The problem, of course, is the deficit which the United States is running, and the efforts which we're trying to make in order to have a basic improvement in the international deficits which the United States has been running. Now, our simple suggestion was that rather than approach it upon the basis of some direct payment for troop costs, that we try to find some alternative method which would be compensating and which at the same time would not result in the outflow of dollars for this purpose.
How do you explain such a unanimous misinformation among the press of two countries, Mr. Secretary? I don't mean that as an impudent question. What happened? How did we present our case so badly?
I don't know how you make an explanation of this sort. The agreement which we made with our German friends at their suggestion was that we would not discuss any of the ideas which were being discussed by our two countries until the end of our conversations, at which time there would be a communique issued, and we abided by that agreement.
Mr. Rapley.
I'm curious, Mr. Secretary, as to the timing of these rather drastic steps coming just after the election, just before a new administration. This problem has been a building for 3 years or more, and I wonder if there was any point in, if there was any effort on your part to sort of swing a haymaker that would jolt things that might cause the new administration to follow in your path.
No, this is not the idea. Let me point out in the first place that we have taken a great many steps because of the deficits which we have been running. In the first place, in 1959, we moved from a deficit position to a surplus position in our internal budget. We have set up a development assistant group between the various countries who have the capacity of exporting capital. We have encouraged our friends to remove restrictions which they have long held against us, against our American imports. We have urged our friends to accept a larger share of aid in the developing countries. In recent times, we have been concerned because of the continued accumulation of large claims against our limited reserves, of the symptoms which came about as a result of the increase of prices in the free gold market of London, of the propaganda moves which have been taken by the Russians in the revaluation of their ruble, which is in fact a devaluation, of the kinds of uncertainty which grow out of such activities as those transpiring in Cuba and those in North Africa. And it seemed appropriate to us that these are the sorts of things which, without reference to administrations, are the facts of life and must be faced realistically by our people and by all people.
Mr. Lissagor.
Mr. Secretary, as you've just pointed out, this problem spills over into defense and into foreign policy matters in a rather large way. Why is it that you, as Secretary of the Treasury, is negotiating this matter and not the Secretary of State, since it does spill over into such matters as our troop situation in Germany and our foreign aid problem and so on? How does it come about that you are the negotiator?
Mr. Lissagor, I was not just the negotiator. This was a group of people. Mr. Douglas Dillon had equal representation. Secretary Irwin represented the Department of Defense. There were no conversations, no negotiations of any kind which were not participated in by all of us. These were the results of consultations between the Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of State, the President of the United States, and myself, and we were carrying out his instructions.
Behind my question was the thought, Mr. Secretary, that whether the Treasury recommendations would be overriding because of the seriousness and the urgency of this dollar problem in such matters as foreign aid, in such matters as defense problems. Could you answer that? Would the Treasury recommendations be overriding?
Mr. Lissagor, I do not think anything is overriding. It is a problem of keeping the matter in perspective. It is the fact that we must recognize that if we in the free world are going to provide the resources which we need for ourselves, for the developing countries, for the very military security that we have to have for a period of time that nobody knows how long it will last, we cannot impair this financial system upon which it is rest our capacity to perform all of these capacities. And they must be a joint, shared responsibility of all of the agencies of the United States government.
We have about 2 minutes, gentlemen. Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Secretary, obviously neither reducing expenditures for military dependence nor having Germany share part of the cost of the military effort there are going to be adequate to wipe out a $4 billion unbalance. How can this actually be done without drastic cuts in foreign aid and in military aid?
Mr. Wilson, when one faces a deficit, one goes about the problem and by saying, how do I increase my income? How do I persuade other people to assume a part of the responsibility? And how do I tailor my expenditures to the greatest amount of good? Now, the important thing is that we try to do the right things and avoid doing the wrong things. We cannot have a system in which we of the United States meet all of our requirements and leave a hungry world or an unprotected world. We must have a system in which there is a community sharing of these responsibilities. But it must be attacked in the idea that there is no simple panacea.
If we drop the leadership in this thing, however, aren't we just in the danger of opening all the world to further Russian penetration, that they'll come in and sit down in the chair that we get up out of?
Well, I'm not quite sure that I follow your
problem. Well, I mean, if you try to make other countries share the responsibility for foreign military aid, for example, or for economic aid more particularly, aren't you going to weaken it to such an extent that the Russians can move in where we have been trying to exercise influence and hold together a free world?
Well, we must continue to do our share, and no less than our share, and we must do all we can to increase our income so that our share can be responsive to the needs of the country. But we must not imperil the financial system upon which the capacity of the whole free world rests, because this would certainly give the Russians a great victory, and without firing a shot.
Sorry to have to interrupt. I see our time is up. Thank you very much, Secretary Anderson, for being with us.
Monitor's thanks to Secretary of the Treasury Robert Anderson and to members of the Meet the Press panel, Richard Wilson of Kohl's Publications, Peter Lysagor of the Chicago Daily News, Willard Rapley of Time Magazine, and Robert McCormick of NBC News. Meet the Press, celebrating its 16th anniversary on the air, produced by Lawrence E. Spivak. If you've given to CARE in the past, then you should feel that you've helped to do an important job. For instance, in Vietnam, your generosity has provided a new chance for refugees from the North. In new village after new village, the CARE packages have provided food, but also farm tools, woodworking kits,